show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Kansas City Baseball Vault. As always, we are brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. Go check them out. Great place to watch college basketball or spring training games once those start being broadcast. This is Michael Engel. Again, I'm in the captain's seat because Jeff Herr is still out on a forced paternity leave. Everything's going well with the new young one. So if you want to send your, I guess, advice to him, he's at the Jeff Report on Twitter. We're at KC Baseball Vault on Twitter and KansasCityBaseballVault.com on the interwebs. But since I'm running this side, we've got another guest co-host for you on this episode. And just like the last two times, we dug deep. We went on the Twitter machine and found a willing victim. And this week we have Craig Brown from RoyalsAuthority.com. Craig, how's it going?
It's going good. Thanks for having me sit in the co-host chair for an evening.
It's pretty cozy, I've found. The hosting chair is a little, I don't know, Jeff's skinnier than I am, so I'm kind of breaking it out, I think. So.
Well, and I have to congratulate Jeff, too, I mean, on the addition to his family. I don't think that I've reached out to him on the Twitter machine yet, so that's probably like some sort of internet faux pas on my part. But Jeff, congratulations. And I think it's awesome that you guys have like this health plan where he gets paternity leave. Not a lot of podcasts probably do that, but you know, good for you guys to, you know, to have your premiums all taken care of and whatnot. You know, and I'm sure Obama has something to do with it too, but
we have an excellent union. Actually, it worked out
the
great.
Podcasters Union, number 209 or something like that.
Right. The Kansas City branch. We're going strong since 2011. Somewhere some older podcaster from way back when is saying, back in my day, we didn't do that. We just sent him out on the farm and let him get back to work.
I can't wait to hear you guys' commercials on the Royals radio broadcast then.
Yeah. Yeah. That's never going to happen. Officially, the spring training is open. Pitchers and catchers have reported, and the full team is there. A lot of those guys were down there for a while, but everybody needs to be there now. And I don't believe we've got any visa issues this time around. Usually there's one or two guys who are still working on getting that resolved. So as far as I remember, it's a full camp. Craig, I mean, what are you looking forward to most out of this camp? We were talking that it's a little bit of a quiet time right now. The Royals are kind of set, but I mean, what things intrigue you at least here in the first week of a full camp?
Yeah, it is. It does feel really set. I promised myself going into to this experience here that I wasn't going to use the C word that everybody's using, which is spelled C-O-R-E. Right. So, you know, and so everybody's got we're talking about this team that doesn't have a lot of competition in spots. So what are you going to watch? I mean, for me, I guess it would be to see if the Royals have faith in Christian Colon and will give him a fair opportunity, which it seems a little more likely that they're going to now, since we found out the other day that Omar Infante's surgery was a little more extensive than we were led to believe, to shave down the bone spurs. And he needs a little more recovery time, so he's going to miss a little bit more of the early part of the spring. So, you know, I think that a month ago or so when the Royals started talking about, you know, having a competition at second base, I kind of you know, rolled my eyes a little bit. You know, the Royals will say stuff like that from time to time, and and didn't really believe it. But now, okay, you know, I'm buying into this a little bit more. So that'll be interesting. And then, you know, I think it's how the back end of the rotation shakes out. You know, I mean, I know that we got a lot of guys that we can discuss, but the Royals have a lot of candidates for the fourth and fifth starter positions. And so I think that's something that will probably be the most interesting storyline in camp, and it'll probably you know, flow a little bit like we saw last year, as to, you know, how it comes down to how they break these guys out in their turns in the rotation, how they piggyback guys to get them work on what would be regular rest for them, and how, as we go deeper into spring, you know, some guys are going to, you know, maybe be injured or not be able to compete, or, you know, just they'll start assigning those guys to the minor league camp. So it'll be really interesting to see the direction that they take as they whittle down that roster to 25 guys, to see who falls into that fourth and fifth spot.
Yeah, they went out and just in the last week, they've added a few names that are instantly recognizable. It's, you know, anytime you start getting some of those minor league signings, a lot of the times they're guys like, well, that guy won't make it, that guy won't make it. But, you know, they got Brian Dunsing from some college somewhere. I hope we find out someday.
Yeah, I've never heard that mentioned on a broadcast before.
I know, you'd think they'd bring that up.
But yeah, exactly.
They don't. You know, Ross Ohlendorf is another name that popped up on the ledger there, and Clint Barnes. You know, none of those three are really lighting it up, but they're all guys who have recent major league, at least experience, if not success. They all could possibly have roles. I mean, do you see any of them having any real impact at all, or are they just going to be fodder to kind of fight for a spot and see if somebody can rise up?
Well, that's a tough question, because they've got so many guys in camp that are, you know, name guys that we all recognize. Dunsing, I guess, is that lefty reliever, you know, the loogie specialist, as it were. But, you know, it depends on, you know, the guys that the Royals have in front of them. I mean, if Danny Duffy goes to the bullpen, or Ohlendorf is interesting as a reformed starter who, you know, is now kind of relying mostly on his fastball slider. And he's the kind of guy that I think that the Royals, you know, he caught their attention because he is mainly going to the two pitches. He got that uptick in velocity that we see a lot of times when a guy goes to the bullpen. He started striking out more guys than he has in the past. So, you know, I mean, I see him as depth. It's so hard to crack that bullpen. Like, you know, like I mentioned, for the starters, you know, the bullpen guys, you're talking about the, you know, the sixth, seventh, eighth guys in that bullpen, important guys, because the Royals aren't always going to be able to go, you know, Herrera, Soria, Davis. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they're going to get work in. But if anything, the Royals have become really adept over the last couple of years of, you know, stashing guys on the farm, bringing them up at the right time, getting, you know, a couple weeks out of them, and then maybe either releasing them if they don't have options left, or sending them back down. It seems to me that they really kind of have a plan in place as to how to use these, I'll call them fringe relievers, fringe because they're not going to stay on the roster all year. So I think they bring these guys in, and as the spring evolves, they'll kind of figure out, you know, how they fit in, and a lot of them will end up in Omaha to start the season. And because most of these guys are all on minor league contracts. Mm-hmm. And so then, you know, they'll, you know, eventually get a call and contribute for a little bit. And, you know, I mean, it's good depth to have. Now, if we've got a guy like, you know, Ohlendorf, who's, you know, all of a sudden the eighth inning guy, you know, that means something's probably gone horribly wrong with the Royal season. So, you know, we're talking about guys to, you know, kind of fill the innings in some of those games that are blowouts in either direction.
Another guy that it hasn't really been, I think maybe the Star's probably written about him, but I mean, they'll write about everybody, but not everybody's been talking a lot about Dylan G, who, not the most sparkling record, but he's just kind of got squeezed out of that Mets rotation last year. And the Royals had been kind of looking at him, poking around in trade talks for the last few years. And he's a guy who fits right in that same kind of mold with guys like Young and Medlin and Duffy, who they probably wouldn't ever expect 200 innings from any of those four guys, and nor should they. But he could come in and cover a good 125 innings pretty easily if he's pitching well. And that gives them just even more depth to kind of play with for just any of those options. Anybody, starter, bullpen, whatever, they can mix and match those four guys. And you know, just goes along with what you said before with guys who have name value, some experience, a little bit of success here and there. It's a lot of names. I think Clark on your site even went through and, like, you know, just talked about the pitching inventory and how many guys they have and everything. And not just for this year, but even some guys for, you know, later in the year, next year. Mike Minor is another guy that they signed who won't be around. You know, he's not going to be maybe June is best case, but probably July, kind of on the same Chris Medlin path. But he's right. Going to be available for next season, for 2017. So they're already kind of getting guys there lined up for other spots too. And just kind of looking forward to which guys might be already dropping off and taking a chance on a guy like Minor, who's got a lot of risk. Anytime you're getting a shoulder injury and you're a pitcher, that's not like a Tommy John anymore, where, you know, Tommy John's relatively easy to come back from. Labrum surgery, not a lot of guys come back from that. So, I mean, do you have any expectations for Minor, or just let's see what he does and hopefully he actually can be relatively average?
Yeah, that's the $7.5 million question that the Royals are asking. Minor's a tough one. I was looking at some of his data, the pitch FX data, some of his raw numbers. One thing that was pretty interesting that has been pointed out at other sites, I didn't just like discover this. But as much as I would like to claim responsibility for this, his release point in 2014 was really all over the place, especially was elevated, and that caused his pitches to go flat. He had a pretty poor year. His best years have come when he's had that more consistent release point, which, you know, I mean, shocking, right? So he's a guy that has had the mechanical issues in the past. And, you know, the Royals obviously have confidence in Dave Island to, you know.
He's a wizard.
He is a wizard. I'm sure he has a cap in the clubhouse that is his pitching wizard cap that he puts on when he talks to these guys.
It's a Photoshop idea.
He'll find the flaw. Now it's up to Minor, who, you know, like I said, he seems to have had issues throughout his career finding that consistent release point. So, you know, if somehow Island can work his magic and get that release point settled, you know, he could have some value for the Royals. But, you know, you're absolutely right, though. It's that shoulder surgery. I mean, the Royals could tinker with his mechanics, but if all they want, but if that shoulder's not sound, you know, it's going to be $7.5 million, you know, that they, you know, took that gamble on that they won't see any return from. So, I mean, I think, you know, I don't know. What do you think? Like, best case scenario this year, what are we going to see from him? Do you think like a handful of spot starts, you know, like in that number five spot, or if somebody, you know, is injured for any period of time in the second half of the season, you think that we're going to see like 5-10 starts from him and maybe another, you know, 10-15 out of the bullpen?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be tough because they'll still have the other guys. And when you have like Young, they'll probably give him another stretch where he doesn't make a few starts just to keep him fresh later into the year. Like last year, I think they found where his wall was last year, which was not surprisingly, where it was the year before. Duffy is kind of the weird guy in all of this, because if he is just mowing guys down starting and he's able to like be efficient, then maybe they'll be tempted to actually throw him in the rotation, and that changes a lot. I don't know what to expect for Minor. When they signed him, I was just kind of like, cool, it's a name. It's a name that I know. And then I was like, but wait, he's been hurt all this time. I think, what did Medlin do last year? I don't have his numbers in front of me, but I think that might be somewhat similar to that. Maybe a 10% reduction, just because, you know, it is shoulder, and maybe they're going to take their time on making sure that he's right before they even try to do anything. I don't know. I mean, they have so many guys where it's just like, I'm not sure how they're going to use them. I think you can probably be safe expecting Young and Medlin to start at the back end of the route of the rotation, but could be Dylan G, could be David Huff if things go very strangely. I don't think so, but he made a few starts for the Dodgers late last year. So I mean, it seems like they have enough depth; they don't have to worry about that. But
yeah, they have a ton of options. I would love to see like their whiteboards. You know, they've got in the coach's office, they got these boards full of players, like depth chart kind of things. And I would love to be able to get into one of those rooms and just kind of see how the Royals see all this. Because, you know, I mean, you and I, we can sit here and we can say, you know, well, maybe this, maybe that. I guarantee you that the Royals have a pretty firm idea as to what they can get from each of these guys and how like optimally they would like to use them. Now, of course, you know, things happen, so you don't always get that opportunity to, you know, have optimal use. But, you know, I was looking, you mentioned Medlin. He started 8 games last year, 15 appearances total, 58 innings. That actually seems pretty good for if you're going to get something out of Minor. I mean, that seems pretty comparable, I think. But, you know, and then circling back to Duffy, who you mentioned, there is no guy on this roster that I want to succeed more than Duffy, because that means if he succeeds, this team is going to be a freaking juggernaut. I mean, I really believe that. He has so much ability and has put it together for, you know, little stretches. I mean, we saw it in 2014, really good, you know, up until that point when he got hurt. I would really like to see him in the rotation, maximize his potential, because then this team, it feels like, you know, we've always wanted to kind of have that 1-2 with him and Yordano.
Yeah.
Just because the Royals need to develop starting pitchers, and these are the two guys that we're really kind of hanging our hats on at this point in time. And boy, if they could somehow make that happen, I mean, I'd be the happiest Royals fan around. I think that they're, you know, and Duffy's always confounded me. I mean, I know that he's good out of the bullpen, but there's so much more value for him in that rotation. And if he's smart, he's going to make more money if he could if he could end up in the rotation. So I know in the past I think last year or 2 years ago, I can't necessarily remember, he was kind of lobbying more to be in the bullpen, and I was just kind of thinking to myself, well, what are you doing? I mean everybody should want to start. I mean, Wade Davis was cranky when they put him in the bullpen, and obviously it's turned out great and I'm sure he's happy now, but at the time he's like, no man, I want to start. Well, I would think that that's what every pitcher at certain points in their career wants to start, when they're kind of on that line, you know, do they go into the rotation? Do they go into the bullpen? So for Duffy to kind of say that, you know, he's more comfortable in the bullpen or whatever, it kind of stunned me a little bit, but you know, I'm hoping that he's realized at this point that his value is much higher if he can be successful in the rotation.
Yeah. And if he's not closing, he's not going to make that money, and he's still got another year of arbitration. So It's probably, maybe he's not going to lobby as hard, but at the same time, the Royals, when they're looking at that whiteboard, of those guys who may not crack, you know, the last two spots, Duffy's probably the guy, if he was in the bullpen, is going to be the best out of the bullpen. And, you know, if that means that the Royals can extend, God, you know, go Hochaver, Duffy, Soria, Herrera, Davis. I mean, that's just...
That's sick. Crazy. That's outrageous.
You can put any combo of three of those guys and probably close out the last three innings of any game any day of the week and feel pretty confident that it's, you know, one of the top five trios in all of baseball. And that's just, it's weird to say with some of the names that you've got in there, but it's just like, that's just what the Royals have been able to do, is they can find those guys and put them in the bullpen. But yeah, if Duffy can be a number two guy, if you can go Ventura, Duffy, and then bump Kennedy and Volquez down to three and four, that's getting to be a pretty strong group where you've got the upside and the phenoms up front, and then you've got those, you know, 200 inning guys in the middle. That'll play. And in a division like the Central, where, you know, there's not really a strong team, like the Tigers are so old and broken down. The White Sox keep getting, it seems like every year the White Sox get hyped up. And it's like, yeah. I just don't, one, as long as Ventura's there, not worried about it. Two, I don't really see it that much. I guess maybe it's just a bias because I'm a Royals fan, but I don't see it. I'm not overwhelmed by anything they've done. The Indians are, you know, the rotation's good, but you know they're outfield.
Oh.
Yeah, they're not going to have Brantley, and you know they had Avilas for half the season and left last year, and then the Twins are the Twins. They're still, you know, I don't buy hardly any of last season, so it's right. Still the Royals division. Or it's, I guess, still implies that they've kind of been camped out, but you know they won 95 last year and they haven't had significant losses really. Other than Cueto and Zobrist, who they only had for half a season. And, you know, depending on how much you believe in Ian Kennedy, they, you know, didn't lose a ton, I suppose. So, I don't know. I'm interested to see how Duffy turns out. I remember last year where, I think it was last year or maybe the year before, where he did say he was more comfortable in the bullpen. And it's just like, that is surprising.
Right.
But, I don't know. I mean, maybe that's the secret. But then again, in 2014 he was really, really good when he started for most of the season, so I don't know. He's an interesting guy. I'm not sure what to make of it.
But the bear suit is killer.
Oh yeah.
You know, I mean, I would love it if he would start every fifth day and then give his post-game interview wearing the bear suit, although I do understand that the bear suit is reserved for very special occasions. Which, you know, hey, I don't want to break tradition or wreck the code or whatever they got going on in there. But maybe he could, you know, wear some other kind of animal suit, you know, for those every 5 days after he pitches or something like that. file that away for weird things that I would like to see.
There's another thing. Duffy in various suits. I was surprised I don't remember seeing the bear suit after the World Series.
I
think it was just the division clinching.
Well, I think he kept it in the locker at home. So, that's just, we need to find a gif of that, you know, where he's talking to Joel. It's a bear suit, Joel. That's
I'm wearing a bear suit. Just like, what a guy. And Duffy's awesome. Duffy's a fun guy to talk to whenever you get the chance to. So he's, I know we've had him on here a few times, and it's just like, you know, he's just as candid as you can find an athlete to be. So it's really easy. Well, not as candid, I guess. I guess there are plenty of others, but as candid as you can be as an athlete and not be a jackass.
Yeah, no, he seems like a great guy.
Yeah.
And somebody, I mean, his statements in the past, the whole bury me a Royal sort of thing. I mean, people here love that sort of stuff, as they should. And he, you know, I mean, I'm really, really rooting for the guy to put it all together just, you know, bottle all that potential that he's flashed from time to time and just really kind of, you know, step to the front. A number two starter might be a bit of a stretch, but I mean, he can be a really, really solid contributor to that rotation. So that's my hope. That's my, you know, that's my one thing that I will look for as the season gets underway. And I mean, hopefully comes out of spring training in the rotation. But even if he doesn't, I have no doubt at some point he's going to be in there because of like what we've been talking about. They have so many capable guys that at some point you figure everyone's going to get a shot.
Yeah, I think any of those guys are going to end up making a few starts here and there just because that's how it ends up working out. You usually, you know, you don't get like, I think it was 2014 where the Royals used like 8 different guys started a game, and one of those was Aaron Brooks for one start, and Bruce Chen got like 8 starts, and the rest were basically the same group of guys. And you can never count on that. That was remarkably fortunate, and this year the Royals seem like they're primed and set up to cover some of those extra turns. So I think that's going to be a good thing. Did we miss anybody? Anybody else intriguing? Let me see. I have a list here. I wrote Chenmi Wong, but I'm not scratching him out literally as we speak because no.
What about Tim Collins coming back from Tommy John?
Oh, geez, yeah. He's coming back too, probably about May.
Yeah,
I think is the idea. So they're
kind of on the Hochaver plan.
Just another guy, and if he has control with them, you know, as long as everything else is in place, he can be pretty good for stretches. Not in that same group as kind of the Cyborgs, but still decent, slightly above average kind of guy with
a serviceable arm in the middle part of that bullpen.
Yeah, which a lot of teams don't have. That's their weak spot, and for good reason. I mean, those teams don't try to go a full 7-8 deep in their bullpen like the Royals do, either out of design, accident, or necessity. So, Collins, he's easy to overlook in all this, too, because you didn't see him last year and don't really hear a whole lot otherwise because there's so many other guys in that bullpen, and the Royals go out and sign Kennedy, so all the attention goes to him and things like that. So that, yeah, there's another one. So pretty crowded in there. And that didn't even bring up Zimmer or Almonte, who...
Oh, well, sure.
I mean, I don't know what to expect from either of those guys. I mean, we were talking with... I was talking with Hunter last week and a half ago on this show, and, you know, he was pretty dead set that they'll probably sit on Almonte and just make sure he can start and keep working on that third pitch and not try to push him into the bullpen. And they have no reason until injury or performance, you know, tells them otherwise to continue to do that. And same with Zimmer, too, who, if he can actually stay healthy, maybe he'll be someone in July and August who can make some starts. But I don't know. I'll hold my breath on that one and pass out. It's just... Just a tough guy.
I've been holding my breath since 2012 on Zimmer. Yeah, he's an interesting one, and I think I would agree with Hunter on his assessment on Almonte, mainly because they've got all that depth now, and like you said, they kind of were in a spot where they could use them last year, and this year, you know, I mean, maybe again it's the same sort of thing where they get them some random innings in September, but you know, and I know that there's a lot of debate about where he's eventually going to land, so I assume that this season in AAA will go a ways to determining that. But you know, I mean, boy, if Kyle Zimmer ever got to Kauffman and you know, made a start, I mean, that would be cause for a minor celebration, I would think. I mean, I just keep hearing, you know, these rave reports about his stuff, and just, you know, boy, if they can get him through this spring and without, you know, some sort of weird thing happening to him, you know, I would really, really like to see him put together a strong half season in the minors, and then, you know, maybe he's a guy that comes up to, you know, for a spot start. You know, talking about all these guys that they have, I'm not entirely sure, you know, with service time and options and whatnot, how it would work if, you know, you bring up a guy like a, you know, I mean, just throw a name out there, you know, David Huff. They bring him up for whatever reason, and then they want to send can they send him back down, or would he go on waivers? And you know, I mean, all the rules that govern these players, and when we get so deep in these minor league contracts, you know, obviously they would have to be put on the 40 man to get there, and all sorts of stuff will have to shift around. So it's not like they have carte blanche where they can just do whatever they want to. So at some point, just through attrition on these guys, you could end up maybe seeing Almonte a little bit earlier, because there's no way, you know, we're talking about this huge list of guys. Well, you know, in August, that list is going to be severely whittled down. They're going to lose guys to waivers. They'll just outright release guys just for some reason or another. They could trade some of them. Unfortunately, you know, I mean, none of these guys really have trade value. So when I say something like that, it's like you're getting
cash
prospect or cash. Yeah. And so, you know, I mean, there's a lot of things, obviously, that'll happen to this group that we're kind of focused on right now.
No, that's a good point. They're not going to bump Jorge Bonifacio to get David Huff on the roster. They'll make do with Christian Binford or whoever they have to. They'll put one of those other guys in the rotation and have Scott Alexander come up. Guys who are already on the 40-man and just kind of go with that. So that's a good point. And, you know, that's why a lot of those guys have those opt-outs, because they know that, you know, just to make sure.
Right.
They're not going to get stuck riding the minor league bus when they could probably get on another major league roster somewhere.
Now, the only guy that I think that I've heard that has the opt-out that they brought in on a minor league deal is Dylan G. And I think he's I thought he had, like, it was like a really early date where if he wasn't on the 40 man, he could go.
I think it might even be in late March.
He could walk. Well, I saw on Cott's contracts it was March 15th, but I thought it was like earlier than that. So anyway, G is the only guy, as far as I'm aware, that needs to be on the 40 man roster by mid March. So they've got a little bit of flexibility there, I guess. But right now the 40 man's full, I believe, and they put Vargas on the 60-day DL.
Yep. So it'd be full so for that.
Yeah. So they would have to either put somebody else on a 60-day DL, which they don't really have. I suppose that they could put like Minor on there, depending on how he's doing. Or they would have to, you know, like you said, pass somebody through waivers to clear up that spot. So.
Ah, it's a fun game.
Roster math.
All right, I think we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to just wrap up with a few other notes. Kind of a quiet little week of news for the Royals. Actually, a pretty busy week of news, but none of it really consequential. Like, nothing happened mostly all winter until Ian Kennedy and Alex Gordon, and then that's about it. But we will cover the rest after this break, so we will see you on the other side.
The Kansas City Baseball Vault will be right back after these messages.
Somebody feels sexy. Oh, baby.
The Vault.
Anytime's a great time to stop by Kelly's Westport Inn, but March is packed with good times. Stop in for a beer and the multiple TVs tuned to the Big 12 or NCAA tournament throughout the month. Or maybe you're looking for some liquid encouragement before the Westport 4-mile run on March 12th. Kelly's is open at 10 a.m. for runners and spectators alike. Grab some pizza from Joe's in the back to replenish those calories you burnt off running or watching. And you can celebrate St. Patrick's Day the way it's meant to be done, with a pint or two, or, well, drink responsibly. Starting at 10 a.m. on the 17th. But if you can't make those days, any day will work. You'll get the same great service that's made Kelly's Westport Inn a Kansas City tradition since 1947. With live music on the weekends, drink specials, and an open rooftop for those warmer days and nights, it's always a good time to stop by Kelly's Westport Inn in the heart of Westport. What if you're looking at your weekly fantasy opponent and thinking to yourself, I want to challenge just one of those players, not the whole team? Most fantasy sports services don't allow this. but now you can do that on the all-new No Halftime app. The No Halftime app allows you to create individual challenges using players or teams. For example, you can take Bryce Harper against Mike Trout, or you can take Eric Hosmer against Freddie Freeman. Creating a challenge takes seconds. Accepting challenges is even easier. No Halftime challenges can be private or public, and you can create them for Major League Baseball, the NFL, NBA, NHL, PGA, and other sports. Join today and get started in a real money or $0 challenge. Visit NoHalftime.com for more information and to download the No Halftime app for your iPhone or Android device. You can also receive a bonus by entering promo code ROYALS at signup. That's at No Halftime, where the fantasy sports season never takes a break. And welcome back to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. Thanks for sticking through that break. You heard our announcements for Kelly's. They've got some pretty cool stuff happening in March, obviously St. Patrick's Day. But we're also going to be doing a tweet up and a game watching event at Kelly's on March 19th. The Royals are broadcasting one of the spring training games from Arlington at 2 o'clock. So I think the right field seats are about 250 feet from home plate. And the Royals have Eric Hosmer, Alex Gordon, and Mike Moustakas. So I'm not saying, but I'm just saying, you might want to come down to Kelly's, hang out, have some beers, and watch some baseball with us, and get back into the groove. In the first segment, we talked about just kind of general camp notes and spring training, roster math and things like that. But one of the things that Craig said when he was talking about Danny Duffy was bury me a Royal, and kind of along those lines, in the last week or so, the Royals signed Dayton Moore and Ned Yost to contract extensions. You know, Dayton, I think at this point, has pretty much earned it. You win a world championship and increase your wins for, what, 6 years in a row. You probably deserve a little bit of extra assurance there. And but the surprising one was Ned Yost, who I think a lot of people kind of figured was going to ride out this contract and be done. But, you know, when he was talking about it, he was saying, hey, you know, Dayton's going to still be here. And they're showing a lot of faith in the remaining guys who will be around, even though there's going to be a mass exodus in 2017. So what are your impressions about either of these extensions, or are they both making total sense for you? Or were you surprised like I was about the Ned Yost one, or surprised about the Dayton one?
Yeah, I wasn't really surprised about the Ned one, just because I think he really loves his guys. I mean, it's just you watch him and his interactions with the players, and I think even more importantly with the coaches. I think he's got this staff that they have built up that he really relies on. And I've heard interviews with him from the national media that's been down in Surprise, MLB Network, ESPN, where he says that it's like when he's in the dugout, he's got like four managers there. They're all watching the game and they're all like communicating during the game about strategy, about things that they're noticing, you know, that the other team's doing, that their team's doing. So, it's a highly functional clubhouse that built. And I think that Ned realizes that's pretty rare in this game. And, you know, I don't doubt that when he signed his extension, you know, in 2015 for the 2016 season, that he was kind of thinking, okay, you know, that might be the end. But I think just based on the success that they had last year and the fact that that this group is going to be around for two, hopefully more years. I think he obviously really wants to be here. So, and I think Ned is just kind of, you go back to when he got here and, boy, even as recently as the wild card game when, they were fitting him for the dunce hat and he'll still do some things from time to time that, you go, I'm not entirely certain that that was the right play as far as the odds, but I mean, the guy's living right, I mean, who's going to bet against him,
It's true.
So, if he can keep that going, good for us, as fans of this team. But I think that there's such a level of comfort that he's built within this team. It's really it's really amazing to see just because you don't see it at any sport where he's it's kind of that push button managing and some people could be derisive about it, but it took some trial and error to get to the point where he is now. It just didn't all fall into place where he rolled out of bed one day and goes, Wade Davis is my eighth inning guy. Well, no, he moved him around a little bit and, saw something that clicked. And I always say that the role of management is to put the players in a position to succeed. And that's what he's done. So, I mean, from that standpoint, he's a great manager. I mean, it's blows my mind that we're sitting here and we're talking about him like this, because if you had come to me a couple of years ago and said, hey, what do you think? I'd be, obviously it would have been different, but he knows his guys and his guys respect him. And that's very clear too. So to me, that's one of the reasons why this team is so fun to watch, is mainly because of Ned and how he handles his team.
One of the things he's always done pretty much at every turn since he's been on the Royals is he is huge, is just immensely defensive of his guys. He's such a good manager for that purpose. Just from when he took him over, riding guys like Alcides Escobar and guys like you and me, we, talked our smack on him for, letting Escobar hit in a spot where we would pinch hit for him. And he defended it. He's like, hey, he's going to have to do it sometime. He stayed confident in Moose. That's the kind of stuff that just earns you just lifetime affection from 25 guys in the locker room. And it is easy to really kind of ignore that, overlook it, things like that. Especially when you're trying to look at it from, the perspective of statistics and analysis and things like that. But, that is one of the things that I've kind of learned to do over the last couple seasons, is just kind of let it be and just you know what? That's fine. Maybe we're going to hit a speed bump or two, but I think we're going to hit be able to hit the right road to go on. And it does make it a lot of fun. They've got the right kind of mix in the clubhouse. All those young dudes who have just came up through the minors together, have been playing since 2011 together. And Ned Yost he's like Johnny Gomes said, he's the captain of the ship. And he just kind of, he gives them the credit and he takes all the heat from them. And that's easy to respect from not just a baseball manager, just from anybody. That's a good way to go. And I'm surprised to hear myself say that here when I was, I didn't boo him in the wild card game, but man, I wanted to. I don't boo my own guys, but I wanted to.
I understood the boos.
Right. I was like, yep, I hear you. That's such a quick switch. It's just for the guy, it's like Sam Ellinger always says, it's winning Ned, it's successful Ned.
Yeah.
It's just whatever, I can do what he wants. He leads Escobar off in every game in the playoffs, and hey, they win it. lead off inside the park home run.
Some validated. Some enterprising writer should maybe pin one of those historical alternate fiction kind of things. What happened if the Royals didn't win the wild card? You know, I mean, just
kind of surprised that hasn't happened, really.
Everything that has blossomed from that game has just, it's been phenomenal, and, you know, Ned included. But, you know, he took heat during the game. I mean, one of my favorite little tidbits about that is that David Schoenfeld, a writer for the Sweet Spot blog at ESPN, mm-hmm. who, you know, I really respect his work. He published a post during the game that said Ned Yost should be fired for bringing Yordano Ventura in. It was he said that during the game. I mean, so. And look at Ned now. You know, he's got his feet up on his desk somewhere, and he's like, "Yeah, I'm the boss." You know, I mean, he's living right. It's unpleasant to think about, but it would be a hell of an alternate universe, you know. But it's one that I don't want to think about. But it just that whole comeback and what it's meant to this team and how Ned is, you know, now winning Ned, and what would have happened if that they hadn't come back? What would have happened if Josh Willingham doesn't hit a little dinker down the line, pinch hitting for Moustakas, right? I mean, it's just all these little things that, you know, Ned is a manager now. You know, I mean, he takes heat, you know, lets people think that he bunts too much, or that's moving his guys around too much, the pinch running that seems to be unnecessary from time to time. But, you know, a lot of his plays work. The one thing, if I was going to focus on something that frustrates me about Ned as a manager, is that I wish that he took more control over some of the stuff, because it always, you know, like when somebody squares around a bunt, like in the first inning, and we're mm-hmm. all on Twitter and we're losing our minds. And after the game, somebody always says, you know, hey, you know, like,
he,
I mean,
lets Hosmer, him do it.
Hosmer squared the bunt a couple of times. It's like, what the hell are you doing? And after the game, Ned's like, well, you know, he just did it himself. Well, that's when I want to grab him and be like, Ned, have a swing away sign, you know, or grab the guys in the dugout and say, if you square around a bunt, I'm going to pull you from the game because you're my number four hitter, and my number four hitter doesn't square the bunt.
It's not college.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, that's my one complaint right now. So you're talking about, like, minor things that happen maybe once a week, you know, so big picture things. It's like, okay, you know, I guess I can live with it. I mean, if he's got the stones to hit Alcides Escobar leadoff for most of the season and have it work the way that it has worked, I mean, you know, what are you going to do? You're going to hop on his magic carpet and ride with it.
There are clearly bigger forces at work, and they're not for me to question.
Yeah.
It's just not – it's way above my pay grade.
I'm thinking maybe after he's done here, we could draft him as a third-party candidate for president.
Yeah, why not?
I would vote for him. I have no idea where he stands on anything, but I would vote for him. And you know what? Ned is the guy that would make America great again. He could out-Trump Trump, I guarantee you.
I'd like to see that debate. That would be – he'd just respond like Nate Buchanan was asking him questions. It'd be awesome. Or he'd ask Trump about his pants or something. Did you see that – there was a picture the other day, I think it was yesterday, where Andy McCullough was in the same room as Ned Yost and they were reunited again.
Yes. Yeah, so I saw that.
That's fantastic. That was a good show for two seasons. A lot of these same things apply to Dayton Moore too, where it's easily revisionist to say, oh yeah, well, he had his plan all along, you know, and he's made the moves. He's taken just as much heat, probably more than Yost, for a lot of decisions. I mean, I was pretty largely vocal against the Will Myers trade, and that worked out pretty much perfectly for him. Yeah, I mean, you know, no fault with any of the trades last season, even though there were still detractors about, you know, people who didn't want to trade John Lamb for some reason. I don't know where that came from. But Dayton, you know, even in public opinion nationally, has picked up a lot more credit. And to me, a lot of it is, you know, kind of accidental. I mean, okay, Luke Hochever, you try him last ditch effort, it works, great. You know, Alex Gordon looks like a bust, you move him to the outfield and it works. Wade Davis, miserable as a starter, works. You trade Melky Cabrera and get Jonathan Sanchez, who's just 10 ways of awful. But you trade him for Guthrie, and Guthrie's kind of okay. You know, they signed Frank Gore, and he was good. And so it's just like all these things that just kind of worked out but didn't make sense at the time. It's just like, okay. And then when it fits in and they actually make a World Series and then win a World Series, then it starts to be like, well, this was the plan. Which to me, it seems more like I think they recognized they weren't going to be able to compete to sign power and on-base guys, but they could sign the high contact guys. And so
you
turn batting average into your OBP. And no, you can't get a bunch of really top-end starters, but you can get guys who can probably go 5 or 6 innings and don't give it up. And then you go to the guys that you lucked into in the bullpen, and they saw where it worked, and then they went all in on it. They invested further into it. And I think that is probably the most credit I can give him as far as adjusting and finding a way and making it work as a small market GM. Because I don't think a lot of those were plans, but they worked, and some of it is just recognizing what's working and how to leverage it even further, and that I think he's done a pretty good job of, is on top of finding reclamation projects. Ryan Madsen was a great pickup, and Jason Frazier at other times, just guys you can get cheaply, but you still see that little bit. Kendrys Morales, I didn't like that signing. They were dead on. So, I mean, I guess he gets that credit too, but it's just like, I don't know. I'm not surprised he got this extension, as I think you win a World Series, you probably should get a few more years.
Yep. Yeah. So. You said accidental. That was a word that you used to describe it. And that is the word that I think I've been searching for, in relation to Dayton Moore. To me, that's the perfect word. I still have this conflict about Dayton and about how he's run the team. He's done some marvelous things. I mean, don't get me wrong. If you're listening to this podcast, close your email program for a second before you fire off that angry one to me. The Zobrist, the Cueto trades, exactly what this team needed. Even though the Royals were in first when the trades were made, even though they were running away with the Central, it was never about that. Those trades were not about winning the Central. They were about winning the World Series, and it worked. The thing that really troubles me about Dayton and the rest of his staff that he has, the baseball ops guys, is just an overall lack of player development. You got the success stories, Hosmer, Moustakas turning it around last year. But, the drafts are not turning out the talent. Like, the Royals need them to turn out the talent. And especially the last several years have been really kind of barren. That's real kind of behind the scenes sort of stuff. It's real player development kind of happenings that a lot of people, I think, don't pay attention to because, hey, the big league team, 95 wins, World Series title, back-to-back appearances. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously that's all great, but we're talking about, again, and I promised that I wasn't going to use the core word, and I just did, but we've got guys that are leaving, and I know that the plan was always for that pipeline to replenish the system. So you look at the minor leagues right now, Lorenzo Cain could be gone in 2 years. Well, okay, they're going to talk up Bubba Starling. Do you got confidence that that's going to be an adequate replacement? I mean, I don't.
No.
So there's just okay, so they're winning, so they don't have the high draft picks, but they've been missing on mid first round picks or low first round picks. And then, you know, beyond that too, I mean, it's just, there's just been a lot of struggle to get guys through the system to contribute in the major leagues. And so that's something that, that, you know, I mean, I'm stepping back off the ledge of about Dayton. You know, I mean, I was in the Fire Dayton Moore camp. I mean, I was solidly there. I think, but I was there in 2013, I think, is when that post went up. And, you know, I mean, obviously since then things have changed a great deal, but some of the fundamental issues that, that I had with him remain. So, you know, it, whereas Ned, it's like a complete turnaround. It's total. With Dayton, there's still some things that lie underneath the surface for me that I'm more than willing to give him the chance to correct, like with the player development thing, because he has earned it. I mean, you're exactly right. You win a World Series, you get a contract extension, and then you get a couple more years to, you know, kind of see through, you know, hey, part two of your plan, because every general manager will tell you that the plan is to win a World Series. So now, you know, so what comes next? So, I mean, I'm fine with him, you know, running this team, obviously, but, you know, I'd like to see some changes, at least on that front. And I think accidental, I think that that's a really good way to describe what we've seen with a lot of the moves that he's made over the past couple of years. It sounds harsh, and I don't mean it to be harsh, because he's had a lot of moves that he's made with purpose that have worked out completely as intended too. But yeah, some of the things that like you mentioned, you know, acquiring guys and now shifting them in ways that they didn't anticipate, I'm sure, when they acquired them, that's kind of that accidental thing.
Yeah. In a couple of years, it's going to be difficult, because you've got, you know, guys like Moose and Hosmer and Perez and, you know, Duffy and each of those guys, those are all, you know, those 2007, 2008 kind of guys. You know, that's where they kind of got them. And, yeah, the guys to replace them are Chesler, Cuthbert, and I'm not sure who at first, and Christian Colon at second maybe, and Raul Mondesi maybe at short, and I don't know. I mean, it is shaky. We talked about that a couple weeks ago, and like Jim Callis was like, "Well, I'm not sure, sure what's going to happen here," because none of these guys have really jumped out, and even the top guys, you know, Zimmer was, you know, we're still waiting on him. Bubba Starling, who knows? I mean, he might hit 240 and 20 homers each season, and I guess that'll play, but it's certainly not the 5-star. Athlete that you thought you were getting, and you know, it's definitely not the $5 million bonus baby that you figured you'd get. I mean, if he reaches the big leagues, that's a success.
Yeah,
you know, what he does from there is just, you know, it's just a bonus. I mean, this time last year, people were, you know, trying to fit him for Nebraska jerseys again. So it's just like there isn't that group. There are a lot of guys that you. I mean, they have talent. I think they can play in the big leagues. I don't think they'll be good regulars in the big leagues. I like Cuthbert. He looked pretty good most of the time when he was up. I don't think he can be an everyday third baseman. Jorge Bonifacio seems like he's been floating around forever. And, you know, the pitching, a lot of those top guys are guys who were in high school last year or 2 years ago. And, you know, they're going to be far away. So that is difficult. That's a tough thing to balance with what he's done in the big league level, which I guess if they're not challenging for the playoffs, they keep some of those prospects. But at the same time, it's like, you know, they traded Mike Montgomery, who was good for about a month and then fell off. And Odorizzi really, okay, he's good. You know, I'd like to have him back. John Lamb, not concerned with losing him. Brandon Finnegan, not too concerned. They did have to give up Cody Reed, and they had to give up Sean Manaea, and you know, maybe Manaea is still another guy who gets hurt all the time, but the upside on Reed and Manaea is pretty big, so that could be a painful thing in a couple years. But
those two guys are interesting to me, just because if they both reach their potential and perform in the big leagues as like just mid rotation starter, I think I've seen for both of them maybe number two kind of upside. Okay, Mike, I'm reaching way back into the gray matter of my brain here. Correct me if I'm wrong, please. I think Duffy is the only starter that they have drafted and developed.
Now, Drafted and developed.
Drafted and developed.
Yeah.
So you've got two guys that you traded away that you drafted that other organizations are now going to develop. And Manaea had an outstanding season after he moved to Oakland,
mm-hmm.
In their system. And I had read
good fall league season too.
Yeah. And they made some sort of mechanical adjustment with him. I can't remember the specifics behind that, but they just kind of tweaked his delivery a little bit. And like all of a sudden he's like, you know, his secondary stuff was like phenomenal. So to me, that's interesting. Yeah. I mean, the Royals could have traded two guys that end up in the big leagues and they still only have one starting pitcher and he's not even a surefire starter, you know, in Duffy. Ventura, of course, is another guy, but I'm just specifically talking draft and develop. So Ventura necessarily fall into that category, but, obviously Greg Holland is a reliever is another success story, but I'm talking mainly starting pitching, which is something that, you know, that was Dayton, one of Dayton's famous quotes when he got here, pitching is the currency of baseball. And so to me, it's just kind of, you know, you wonder why, and of course there's no such thing as a pitching prospect and all that, but
right.
You know, you would think in the 9-10 years that he's been here now, you would have more than one that you would have drafted and have contributed. And I think Duffy is the only one that has even made an appearance. I guess Aaron Brooks, he was drafted.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, he's made, you know, guys that have made an appearance, but the only impact guy, the only regular guy would be Duffy, I think.
That sounds about right, just off the top of my head.
Yeah, somebody's going to tweet me something that I'm missing, but For a while, I had like a list of guys that they had drafted and developed because it's a pretty short list. Reed and Manaea, I would never go back and undo those trades because of what happened. So to me, it's worth it. But it you know, in 5 years when, you know, Reed's dialing it up with the Reds and Manaea's, you know, punching out batters in Oakland, you know, and the Royals are not as successful, perhaps, you know, we could be forgiven if we sit back and we're like, oh man, we'd really like to have those guys back.
Yeah, that's going to be really easy to say that because it could be pretty rough, but I don't know. It's I don't know what I want to say. It's just like, I don't want to think about it because it's really weird how quickly winning just for a few seasons gets you kind of used to it.
Uh-huh.
And now you have to also remember that teams do have this arc where they do have to, you know, it goes up and down. It's not necessarily the big pit that we had for 29 years, or I guess if you want to count like seasons like 89 and 94 as successful or whatever, I guess maybe after 95, but still that is a long time. And you know, you get back to winning and it's like, this is fun. You want it to continue and yeah, maybe it won't. And the Royals this year in the draft, and I think internationally, I think they're going to have the second least amount of money to go out and sign
something like that.
Like maybe $5 million total for their full draft and international combined, which is, that makes it really difficult when you're a team that does kind of have to rebuild that way through the draft, through, mm-hmm. finding, you know, those guys and you're drafting later, you don't have as much money, you can't get as creative as the Royals have been able to do, even within the capped draft pool system. I mean, it's going to be tough.
Watch, we'll reconvene here in 5 years and we'll be talking about the 2016 draft and how that completely saved the Royals franchise and how they drafted so well that year. And, you know, I mean, it's just you can't predict how any of this is going to work. Yeah, they got their hands tied behind their back. They don't have a lot of money to spend. But, I mean, watch, this will be the draft that somehow, you know, is like their grand slam home run, you know? I mean, you can't doubt anything that these guys are doing right now.
Right.
Because they're living right. So who knows?
Last thing I think we'll cover just briefly, and then we'll get out of here and let people go about, you know, go back to work or whatever, whatever they're going to do. I don't know when people listen to this show, actually. I don't know, like, time of day or anything. No one ever tells me that, so...
You need to do a little Survey Monkey.
I'm kind of curious. So yeah, if you're listening right now, let me know. You know, what time of day, what context you listen to it, or maybe don't. If you're fake Ned, I don't want to know when you listen. You can just tune out, just download and don't listen, and that's fine. The last thing that we'll cover is the Royals have, at various times in the off season, have. Or at least reports have surfaced that, hey, they're talking to Sal Perez and they're maybe tiptoeing around this idea of changing his contract, which is currently pretty ridiculous for a 3-time All-Star catcher with 20 home run power. But it seems like it's even more clear now that there's probably something going to develop out of this. I think it was earlier today or maybe yesterday where they were talking with his agent. I think it was Mellinger in the Star was talking with the agent, and it seems like there's some kind of movement in this. So, obviously Sal has played a ton of games. You know, he's taken a number of hits off of his face mask and things like that. He's already had a knee surgery once. So, you know, for a guy who's 6'3" and just this giant of a human, I can see why the Royals would be hesitant to give him any more guaranteed money than they are. I mean, obviously the contract's crazy. It's no surprise that Sal Perez changed agencies 2 years into it or 3 years into it, because it's just crazy. He's making $2 million this year. Mike Minor's making $2 million this year. I think Brian Dunsing makes 2.6 if he makes the big league roster all year. I mean, it's just like, that's crazy. That's crazy money. So I want to get your thoughts on where this might go, where this contract might end up going if they do actually pull the trigger and do something. And then, is that even good? Like, I'm not certain that he's going to be behind the plate in 2 years. I can't guarantee it, just because that is a ton of wear and tear on a guy who is just huge. And big catchers don't usually stick as catchers.
Yeah, no, I mean, thanks for bringing this up, because I'm going to, you know, be all over the map, because this is such a, to me, it's a complicated issue. It really is. I mean, because of, you know, what do you do? There's a contract, and the contract should be honored. And the team, you know, I don't think that they, you know, felt like that they were, you know, pulling a fast one when they signed him. They gave him a lot of money
for 2 months.
For very limited major league experience. Yeah. He's got 4 years of service time, a little over 4 years, because he had those 2 months. So he would be eligible for arbitration. He would be eligible for second time arbitration. $2 million for a second year eligible player, there's nobody making that money in arbitration at that point. He should be probably what? I mean, I'm just kind of spitballing here. $6 million maybe. And arbitration is always weird. You know, I mean, the guys that lean more towards the stats will, you know, bring up, you know, WAR and, you know, his swing and miss rate and his walk rate and they don't pay attention to that in arbitration.
No, they go homers.
and the Gold Gloves and the All-Star Game appearances. And, you know, I mean, and that, so whatever the maximum value that he could get through that process, that's where he would be. He would be very close to that, I think. And then also, you know, the sheer number of games that he's caught. But yeah, that brings up the flip side. The Royals have abused him. I mean, he should not be behind the plate for the number of innings that he has been behind the plate. Nobody has caught more innings. Nobody caught more innings last year. Nobody caught more innings 2 years ago. And that's just talking regular season.
Yeah.
And then you tack on the postseason innings, you know, with the expanded format, the wild card game, the, you know, World Series 2014 going 7 games. And, you know, I mean, he's played a ton of extra games the last couple of years. So yeah, I mean, I'm with you. There's no guarantee that in 2018, he's going to be the catcher, but then where do you play him? The bat's not good enough to DH. It's not. He's declined in production. Now, is that decline hand in hand with his workload? I'm sure that that's a huge part of the deal, but you know, unless he shows some signs of an offensive rebound, you know, what do you do with the guy when he finally kind of, you know, can't get behind the plate? So I don't know what the answer is. I mean, I think that the Royals would generate some goodwill if they work something else out with him. But I don't think it's one of those things that people are looking at the Royals going, you know, these guys are really evil for holding him to this contract. And, you know, they're one of the worst organizations in sport unless they, you know, renegotiate. Cause that's not true. I mean, people understand that. So, I don't know how that benefits the team, and that's what they got to look out for. So, I mean, do you see a scenario where they would rework the contract in a way that doesn't hurt the team or doesn't put the team at a disadvantage financially? I mean, can you see a scenario where that happens?
I think the most popular thing that people have brought up would be guaranteeing the option years, which start after this season, which is, I'm okay with that. But then I don't know what you do from the dollar amounts. Like, do you tack on a little bit extra for each of them? I mean, by the time you're looking at 2019, it's like you said, I don't know what happens then. I don't know where he's at. And then maybe you do tack on more option years from that point, but that's just, it's kind of scary to think about. He doesn't have any speed. You know, he doesn't hit for average or get on base. I mean, he can't hit for average, but it's a lot of it is contact dependent, which, you know, maybe he's getting more rest in the second half, he hits a little bit better. But I don't think you're going to move him to first base and get 30 homers out of him just because he's playing first base. It's just not how it's going to work out. So I don't know. I have always been on the idea that they don't have any reason to do it. If they want to do it as goodwill, that's great. But they're not obligated to do it. He took the contract. It could have easily been a deal that looked kind of, you know, not, I don't think there's any way it could have blown up in their face to be bad unless he got like a significant injury that continually kept him out. But at the time that he signed it, he had 2 months of experience. And I think in 2009 and 2010, he had, you know, he wasn't really the prospect that he was when he started out in 2011. You know, there were times where he got bumped around and both he and Will Myers were catching games for different levels and they hadn't moved Myers to the outfield yet. And even though that was expected, it wasn't a given. You know, he was splitting time with Jose Bonilla for a couple months there in Wilmington. And I think that was 2010, maybe early. I don't remember the year, but there was 1 year he was hitting, you know, lower 200s in high A. And 2 years later, he's got this contract extension. So it's not like the Royals were stealing away the best years of a surefire guy. I mean, it was someone he rose very quickly, and Ned Yost fell in love with him in spring training in 2011. Earlier than that, but it was certainly written about in 2011. And so I don't think that they were expecting him to be a 3-time All-Star. I think they figured he'd be really solid. But you know, it's a contract. The example that's been brought up plenty of times, I think by us, by others, by Sam Mellinger, by this guy and that guy, is, you know, the Royals have a pretty crappy TV contract, but Fox Sports KC is under no real obligation to try to renegotiate it now unless they just feel like it's the right thing to do or they want to really curry some good favor. And it's, you know, it's well within their right to not do anything about it. So where it ends up, I don't know. I mean, do you add $1.5 million and $2 million and $2.5 million to each season of those option years? Maybe. But, you know, I don't think that's crippling, but you could easily have a situation where he gets hurt in 2017 and never catches again, or is a shell of his former self and still walks 2.5% of the time or whatever it is, and, you know, doesn't have the power that he had last season. So it's, you know, reworking it isn't without risk, even if it's still affordable. So that's what kind of gets me a little bit nervous. I just don't know how he's going to hold up through it.
Yeah, I'm looking at his contract numbers, and I'm wondering if, you know, so he's $2 million this year, which would be arbitration two. His third arbitration year, it's a $3.75 million club option, or what would be his third arbitration year. You know what I think his agent should have done is maybe negotiated a deal with a shorter deal, even with the club options. You know, not gone, cut it off at this season, the second year that he was eligible for arbitration. So then he could kind of get that big payday on that third year if he's been a player, and then he can hit the free agent market. But, you know, I mean, there's guys that have signed contracts kind of based on the same, you know, amount of tenure as him, that though, or those contracts are always going to be team friendly, but you know, his is by far the most team friendly. And so I've been kind of thinking about it. People have asked me, I say, okay, you know, if you want to do right by him, I guess, and kind of, you know, act as a model organization, you activate the club options, maybe throw a little bonus money in there. And then tack on a couple more club options at the end. You know, obviously at higher dollar values, you know, I mean, his final club option is for $6 million. I mean,
right.
that it's ridiculous. So maybe, and you know, you tack on a club option 2020 for, you know, $15 million or $12 million with a nice buyout, you know, $1-2 million, something like that. So if he does get hurt, he still gets a little money. And then, I don't know, maybe, you know, put some pretty hefty incentives in there too, that he can reach, that would reward, you know, what would be seen as good performance. He's got bonus money for All-Star games, and I think he's got some bonus money for Gold Glove awards. And actually that has moved the money forward a little bit that are in these club options, which are still ridiculously low. But
yeah,
you know, maybe you put a clause in there, okay, you win a Gold Glove, you get another million or something. I mean, the award clause is usually like $50,000 to me and you. That's a lot of money. That's
right,
a nice award clause. But, you know, make it substantial to Sal, you know, where, you know, this year he's making $2 million. Hey, you can make $3 million total if you win a Gold Glove. And maybe that's a way to do it. I don't know, but yeah, I move back and forth. I'm all over the road with this. You know, I think that some days that the Royals just absolutely should not renegotiate at all, and other days I think, you know, it wouldn't hurt them necessarily to renegotiate. And I mean, the one thing that we haven't even mentioned here is you want Sal to be happy.
Right.
Sal is clearly a leader on this team. He is clearly a leader. It's somebody that everybody respects. And so even if Sal is unhappy, okay, maybe he keeps that all to himself. Hey, I signed the contract, I'm happy to be a Royal. But what about the other players? You know, what about the guys like Hosmer and Moustakas looking around? They see their brother. He's not getting – and they feel that he's not getting treated fairly. You know, what kind of fallout does that have? You know, I mean, we talk about the great environment that they have in the clubhouse. Is this something that could, you know, damage it in some way? I don't know. And is it worth the risk to, you know, potentially, you know, I don't think it's that this is something that would like destroy the morale in the clubhouse by any means. But I mean, it's a fragile ecosystem in there, I'm sure. So you don't want to upset the balance that they have going on. So. I don't know. I think that I wouldn't be surprised if something got settled over the next month or so, with this, just to kind of take it off the minds of the media, because they're going to get asked. The Royals are going to get
asked. They're going to keep asking it, yep.
All the time. And the way it's set up right now, they're going to get this question asked until 2019. That's a question that they want to have to continually answer.
Yeah, the last kind of element I'm thinking is like, I don't expect Hosmer at all to sign an extension. Maybe Moose, but anything that they give to Sal Perez is money they may not have to apply to any of those other extensions.
Yeah.
So you're kind of in this. It's this damned if you do, damned if you don't. You've got to take on risk somewhere of either taking on a guy that may deteriorate or losing that opportunity to keep another guy who, you know, maybe develop. You know, maybe Moose continues to go the other way and develops into a pretty decent third baseman the rest of his years, and the Royals don't get the opportunity to keep him for an extra 3 or 2 years or something, and because they bumped, you know, they do a deal where they repay Sal the money he could have made in arbitration. So they're, you know, I don't know.
We have no answer.
I just don't know. I mean, there's so many. It's such a weird, I guess, I don't know, the iceberg's on the horizon. That's not the right way to say it, because I don't think it's going to be an utter collapse like, you know, just being stuck with Chris George and Jimmy Gobble. But I don't think
man, you went there.
I know. I got to go for the ultimate pain. It's going to be rocky in a couple seasons for sure. And I just don't know. There's so many weird decisions that have to happen, and I'm not certain. I waver on all of them. I think the Sal thing is going to get done, though. I think it's going to end up going back to take care of him, keep your guy happy. You know, he'll be really happy to spend 15 seasons in Kansas City. And, you know, I don't know. He'll get a statue, too, or something like that. So I don't know. But it's,
can we just beg Ned to start Butera for 40 games? Would it kill you to just 40 games? That's once a week and maybe a couple extra sprinkled out through the season. 40 games, please. I beg him.
Save him a little bit.
that's 120 for Sal. That would be like that. If Sal catches 120 games, that would be the lowest in a full season that he's ever caught. You know, I mean, he's played three full seasons. He missed that one with the meniscus injury. He was called up halfway through the other. So his games caught in the three full seasons he's played, 138, 150, 142. That's regular season. That's absurd.
That is
next year. On his baseball card next year, I want 122 at a maximum. Let's set that there. Let's get Ned on the podcast. Let's tell him, you know, what we've decided. That's the one thing.
Ned, here's what you're doing.
Yeah.
You're going to get Drew Butera. I think Butera, I'm going to try to look this up. I think he has a games played bonus of 25. And it's just like,
it's ridiculous.
In what world is 25 games a bonus? I guess it is Drew Butera who hits about 150, but still. 25 games. Like, you can accidentally play 25 games in the big leagues.
I mean, I would think that just by being in the dugout for a full season, you would somehow get on the field for 25 games.
Yeah.
Somehow. In some way.
Extra innings, even. I mean, he could pitch. He could pitch and get into it.
He could pitch.
I don't know. But you know, it does make me wish they would have kept George Gutierrez, just because at least then you have some offense. But, you know, backup catcher, defensive guy, I get it.
You know, last year there was talk early on in camp that there would be like Butera would be somebody's personal catcher. And that obviously never happened. But that, I think that that's kind of the thing. And Ned mentioned that last year. He said that would be a good idea because it would force him then.
Right.
To take Sal out of the lineup, because it's very hard for Ned to do that. Ned admits that. Ned knows that this is a problem. So it's you know, like anybody that you know with a bad habit, you got to have that intervention, set them down. You say, hey, you know, it can't be this way anymore. You're going to have to do this. And people are going to have to, you know, give Ned a little tough love, I guess. And, you know, and just say, maybe Ian Kennedy will do something like that. Maybe Ian Kennedy will complain that Sal doesn't get low enough, you know. And he's like, Butera over there, he's my guy. So, and the Royals will be like, well, we're paying you a lot of money, so sure, let's do it. I don't know. They got to figure out a way to save this guy physically over, you know, the next couple of seasons.
Maybe that's what happens once they do an extension. It's they finally realize, hey, we're turning this guy to dust, and they change it up. I don't know. I think they're going to finish it off. I think they're going to go into camp. I hope they do. I hope they follow your suggestion and lighten the load on him a little bit. But I have a feeling they wouldn't because it's Ned. How are you going to tell Ned anything otherwise? I mean, what he's going to point to the ring and dismiss you. And it's just what's going to happen. So, we'll just have to see how that goes. Yeah, we'll see. But I think with that, we should let the people go. And definitely thank you, Craig, for joining me and filling the co-host seat for this week and talking some baseball. You guys can find Craig at RoyalsAuthority.com, also on Twitter at RoyalsAuthority. Always good stuff they're putting out. You guys shooting for like a post a day pretty much over there?
Yeah, we do a post a day. We're not too concerned about content, you know. We don't have any quotas. Our quota is one a day during the week.
Oh, quotas. That's a whole other show.
We could do another podcast.
We could do a whole podcast on that. But it won't be this one, maybe, or at least not this episode. So that's where you can find Craig. You can find us at KC Baseball Vault, as always. You want to go to Kelly's. The games are going to start pretty soon. I think Inter-Squad is next week, maybe this weekend. I don't remember what I saw. And then the fun really starts. We get another season and defend the trophy and go from there. But for everybody involved, for Craig, for Jeff at home, hoping for sleep, I'm sure, this has been the Kansas City Baseball Vault. Thanks for listening, and as always, go Royals. Thanks for listening. This has been the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can find us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/KansasCityBaseballVault. If you want to email your thoughts or comments, send those to KansasCityBaseballVault@gmail.com. And don't forget, you can also sign up and subscribe through iTunes, through Stitcher, or you can just go to RoyalsPodcast.com or KansasCityBaseballVault.com for any updates.